I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Last Saturday night, a large group of teenagers gathered in Baltimore's Inner Harbor. After a few tense hours, a handful of kids were arrested for charges ranging from destruction of property to disturbing the peace. The incident was at least the fourth such episode in the Baltimore area since last summer, including disturbances at the White Marsh Mall and East Point Mall in Baltimore County. Reaction to these incidents often divides along racial, generational, and geographical lines. Today on Midday, what standards should youth, parents, the police, and our political leaders be held to? What do we owe our kids when it comes to safe spaces for hanging out? The artist and author Chris Wilson, Salon columnist Dee Watkins, and Dr. Kimberly Moffitt of UMBC join me when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. According to reports, last week on Friday night, eight to ten youths, committed a violent assault on a couple as they left a restaurant near Baltimore's Inner Harbor. Then on Saturday night, a large group of teenagers came downtown. Estimates of the size of that group varied from when reporting on Saturday night's disturbances began and in the ensuing days. Police eventually estimated about 400 young people who police said had been in contact through social media were in and around Baltimore's signature attraction. The police have been commended by their chief, Michael Harrison, the mayor, the president of the city council, and others who applauded the way they handled the crowd. Six young people, including an 11-year-old, were arrested. Mike Mancuso, the president of the Fraternal Order of Police, that's the police union, was widely criticized for an incendiary tweet that he published late Saturday night. The tweet was evidence that the frayed relationship between police and communities of color still has a long way to go. On Wednesday, police edited and released a video showing some of what transpired on Saturday night. Today on Midday, we'll talk about what that video shows, what we know, and what we think we know about what happened, and we'll analyze the response to the behavior of the kids, the police, businesses, and visitors to Baltimore's most prominent promenade. Our panel today, Chris Wilson, is an artist, an activist, and an entrepreneur. He's the author of The Master Plan, My Journey from Life in Prison to a Life of Purpose. Good to see you again. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me back.
Dr. Kimberly Moffitt is the Associate Professor and Chair of the Language, Literacy, and Culture PhD program at UMBC. Dr. Moffitt, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Dee Watkins is an editor-at-large at Salon and a lecturer at the University of Baltimore School of Communication and Design. His latest collection of essays is called We Speak for Ourselves, A Word from Forgotten Black America. He joins us from the studios of NPR in Washington. Hey, Dee, welcome back.
Hey, what's going on? How you guys doing?
Hi, Dee.
What's up, Dee?
Everybody's fine on this end. It's important to us listeners that you be involved in our conversation today as well. We will take as many questions and comments as we can during the course of the hour. We are particularly interested in hearing from any young people who may be listening. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are also streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. And remember, Dee Watkins joins us from NPR in Washington. We have Chris Wilson and Kimberly Moffitt here with me in Studio A. And Chris Wilson, I'd like to start with you.
Okay.
I think a lot of the conversation about what happened this last weekend and what's happened in other incidences over the last year or two depends on what you know, what you think you know, and how you understand the story.
Right.
So Eric Costello, for example, said that sent out a tweet with the facts as he knew them. He's the councilman that covers that district. I wonder, what are the facts as you know them? How do you understand what happened?
So I understand what happened just based on what I've saw on the news, mostly on social media, videos, and a few articles, one or two that were written about the incident. So that's the most that I know about it, but I wasn't there.
If you were going to describe it to somebody from outside of Baltimore, what would you tell them happened?
Well, I would just say it was a night where maybe, allegedly, like some kids got out of hand and some people were attacked. And that's what I heard. And, like, the first thing I would say, like, to anyone, I know that some people were attacked, and like my prayers go out to the victims who were attacked. Like, nobody should be attacked, like, regardless of the circumstances. Like, if that happened, like, you know, my heart goes out to them.
Are you convinced that it did happen? Because you say maybe some people got out of hand and attacked some people. I mean, did you have a doubt about it?
Well, I choose my words carefully because I wasn't there. And if a crime was committed, I think everyone is entitled to a fair trial. And so I can't presume someone's guilty if I wasn't even there and saw what happened. I'm just basing off what I saw.
Did you see the video that the police released by any chance?
I saw pictures. I didn't see video.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, listeners, we have posted that video on the WYPR website. So Kimberly Moffitt, how about you? You're a person who studies media. This
right.
is a thing that you know a lot about. How did you hear about it? What sources were yours? Was it print? Was it Twitter? Was it broadcast? How did you hear about
it? Yeah, so it's similar to Chris. It was definitely social media. In particular, it was the Facebook group Baltimore City Voters is where I first saw it posted. And Eric Costello was one of the voices in that particular space, as well as those that were responding to him. And that's what sent me to Twitter to find out what else was happening so that I could follow the story in more detail.
Mm-hmm. And Dee Watkins, you grew up on the East Side and you still live on the East Side, although you travel the world doing all sorts of stuff related to your writing. How did you hear about it? What do you understand happened on Saturday night at the Inner Harbor?
So I saw the videos on Twitter. Well, I saw clips of the videos on Twitter, and I've done like extensive research on the Baltimore City Police, and I know that they doctor and they edit videos. Sometimes they edit videos and they put like the wrong timestamp on them because the editor's like maybe not the best at his job. But I don't really listen to anything that they say until they prove. Right now, for me, they need to prove that, you know, that they're here for the people who pay their salaries and not just here to try to control and put out narratives the way they want us to see them.
So the videos that you saw, were they, because the police did release a video which they tell us was edited. It was, you know, scenes from what happened over a course of several hours at the Inner Harbor. Did you see that video, or did you see video that was shot by bystanders or people who were there?
I saw a collection of them all.
And so Councilman Costello's tweet said the following. On Saturday, May 25th at approximately 6:30 p.m., there were 400-plus kids in the Inner Harbor. At least one person was assaulted, several reports of destruction of property, and video footage of kids running across East Pratt Street on top of the hoods of cars. Baltimore Police Department Central District already had a significant deployment in place in anticipation of this evening, and additional resources were deployed in response from across the city. Approximately 5 to 10 individuals were arrested in relation to the above. Most of the crowds were dispersed by approximately 9:30 p.m. So, Chris Wilson, does that sound like an adequate summary of what happened to you?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I heard. I heard something similar to that, yes.
Mm-hmm. And Dee, how about you? Does that seem accurate to you in terms of its reporting?
It's general in its basic, like, you know, again, like there's a whole lot of different angles and way to approach the story. And it's crazy that, you know, that we have to sit here and let that be like the summary that we get. And I only say that because police officers in the neighborhoods, many of the neighborhoods where those kids are from, run wild and crazy and even run people out of their own neighborhood. So we don't talk about what got the kids to this place. We just talk about the outcome. We're not talking about you know, what is happening on certain blocks and certain neighborhoods and certain police officers who abuse their power all of the time. We always got to remember that all of these cases don't go viral. So it's like, you know, we talk about the pressures in a harbor, but we're not talking about what pushed those kids to that spot.
Exactly. And we are going to be talking a lot about that through the course of the hour. What I'm trying to figure out is what people know as a sort of baseline. So Kimberly Moffitt, you got your information from social media, which you said included this tweet that I just read from Councilman Costello. I was out of town and I was reading the Baltimore Sun. So I was reading the articles that Tim Prudente and others filed that weekend and continue to file during the week because the basis, that the facts as stipulated by everybody have to be, to some extent, agreed upon before we can understand.
Right.
You know,
right.
And this is a tough thing. And Dee Watkins makes a very good point about the context of this incident in the overarching context of distrust about the police department.
Yes.
What's your take on how the police acted in this incident?
Yeah, I want to first say that I was shocked to see Castello and others even mention the fact that it was kids, because oftentimes when it involves our children, we don't even get that nomenclature to be attached to them. They are often almost immediately perceived as criminal bodies that are acting in a particular way. And so they immediately are eroded of being children who express themselves in inappropriate ways and behave inappropriately in various settings. And so I was first at least excited that someone had acknowledged our children as being just that, children. But then what I noticed with the police, again, similar to what Dee is saying, is the edited video seemed to help tell the narrative in a way that clearly would communicate what we think or what we need to think about our children instead of providing more context. Some of the videos I saw clearly show individuals that were misbehaving in ways that probably weren't to what our community should be supporting or amplifying. But in terms of how the police chose to create it, especially when I read the FOP tweet, was even more disturbing, because I thought to myself immediately, this is supposed to be the era in which we are trying to address police relations with communities. And what we're hearing instead is someone who is continuing to vilify and even segment our populations in ways that won't bring us any closer to each other to be able to work together.
And Chris Wilson, that tweet that Kimberly is referring to, right, by Mike Mancuso, he's the head of the police union, he said, don't fall into the false trap of thinking of them as just kids, as you've just mentioned.
Yep.
They are criminals. And this happened like 11:30 or something Saturday night, so after the incident was finished.
Right. So that's indicative of what some, not all, but with some police, how they think and how they police in these neighborhoods. And I think Dee make a good point when he talked about, we don't hear stories about what happens on the east side and the west side in these neighborhoods. And I grew up in neighborhoods like this where police, when they see you, they chase you. They plant drugs on you. They set you up. And so this is the reality for most of these children in these neighborhoods. And so we can't vilify them. We can't look at them that way. We got to think about the whole picture. Even if it's a group of people who did what they did,
right,
we should be asking ourselves, like, why do they do that? Or what's going on?
Or
like,
or what aren't we doing?
Or what are we doing? Right.
As the adults.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are talking, contrary to the FOP president's tweet,
right,
these are children.
Right.
Regardless of how he may choose to look at these black children, they are still children. And so what are we, as the adults in the room that I think we should be,
right,
what are we doing to take care of the children and offer them the guidance and the direction they need in order to do better?
Mm-hmm. And Dee Watkins, you're doing a lot with kids.
What do you think we should be doing? I would love to see how that tweet would look if it was like a bunch of white boys in Fair Hill wilding out after their favorite football team or basketball team won some type of championship.
That's called celebration, Dee.
Yeah. Or I would also, you know, with cars getting flipped over and beer being poured all over people and things like that. Oh, I would love to see how that tweet would look with some of the police officers who wild out, get drunk, and go crazy when they leave in them FOP lounges. Like, I see y'all. Like, I see y'all. Y'all act like wild, drunk children, and y'all like 30, 40, 50 years old. And at the end of the day, to the politicians, you know, we got some new politicians, not new politicians, but new people in new positions, and I love y'all, and I support y'all, and I want to see y'all do great. But at what point are we going to have somebody who's going to attack this racist language and these racist policies? Who's going to stand up and be like, yo, no, like that's a racist tweet. You just said a racist thing. You are being racist. And if we're going to talk about the problems at the Inner Harbor, then we're not going to sit here and talk about what's wrong with these kids. We're going to talk about what's wrong with our policies. We're not going to talk about why these people down here destroying property. We're going to talk about how can we be better at our jobs, at engaging people, at working with the community and working with schools and working with parents and working with all of these different places to be able to create better outcomes from everybody. Everybody's intentions are to, oh, I love the people and I want to keep peace with the police officers. No, when the police officers jump out there and they say racist things or do racist things, we can't. The first thing you hear is, well, all cops don't feel that way. I'm not trying to hear that. I want to know who's going to be the first politician in Baltimore City to be anti-racist. Who's going to be anti-racist? Who's going to be against racism? Who's going to take a strong stand and say, look, I know we need to have a police department, but at the same time, we cannot be effective unless we engage people like this, this, and that. Everybody's saying, I just want to honor our proud police officers. I just want to. No, like, we can't honor racist behavior just to keep peace because it doesn't work. Yeah. Like, my parents went through this.
Yeah,
my family went through this. Grandparents went through this.
For the record, D, Michael Harrison, the chief of police, who is African American, said that he thought the comments by Mancuso were completely inappropriate. And he pointed out that Mancuso doesn't command anybody who was down there at the Inner Harbor. They were not under his command. They were under Mr. Harrison's command. And the mayor also said that Mancuso's comments, another African-American, this Mayor Jack Young, he's been on the job, you know, like a month as mayor. He also condemned it and said he was going to speak to Mancuso.
I salute both of them. Both of them, because that's the start. And now what? And now what's the next step? How do both of those people, in combinations with people like me and everybody else that's on the panel, and, you know, you, because you care and you have a vested interest as well, how do all of us communicate and get together and start doing, like, putting action into place to engage our young people, all of our people who feel left out and disenfranchised? What can we all do? Like, we all do individual things, but how can we be part of, like, a bigger story and create a bigger collective to bring about change? Because it's just not happening.
And our immediate next step is to take a little break, and then we're going to come back and we will take phone calls, we will take emails and tweets, and we will continue our conversation with Dr. Kimberly Moffitt from UMBC, from D. Watkins. His latest book is called We Speak for Ourselves, A Word from Forgotten Black America, and Chris Wilson. He's an artist and an entrepreneur. His memoir is entitled The Master Plan, My Journey from Life in Prison to a Life of Purpose. You can join us when we come back at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday WYPR. And you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page, where Chris Wilson and Kimberly Moffitt join me here in Studio A. Remember that D. Watkins is in Washington. Before we take a break, a word about an important event taking place this weekend in Washington. The Monument Quilt, a huge project of the nonprofit group Force Upsetting Rape Culture, will be laid out on the National Mall. The quilt is a compilation of 3,000 squares created by and for survivors of sexual assault. There are a number of events planned throughout the weekend in conjunction with the quilt being displayed on the mall, and we've got a link on our website, wypr.org/midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall, and today it's the Midday News Wrap. Yesterday afternoon, the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra announced that it was canceling its summer season of concerts and events, citing deep-seated financial problems. The Maryland legislature proposed and passed a bill that would provide supplemental funding for the orchestra of $1.6 million over the next couple of years. But Governor Larry Hogan has not yet released that money. That's $1.6 million per year for 2 years. BSO management said that it was going ahead with its plan to reduce the number of weeks that the players are hired each season from 52 to 40. This was a surprise announcement, and we'll have more on this story on Tuesday. Coming up Monday on Midday, a conversation with Maryland 8th District Congressman Jamie Raskin. He's a member of the House Judiciary and Oversight Committees. We'll talk about the growing calls for an impeachment inquiry into President Trump. And we'll have an update on the future of the Pimlico racetrack with Maryland Senator Bill Ferguson, Baltimore City Councilman Yitzi Schlieffer, the Baltimore Sun's Doug Donovan, and Karen Hostler of the WIPR News team. So that's all coming up Monday on Midday. If you've just joined us today, we're talking about what happened at the Inner Harbor last weekend here in Baltimore. Dee Watkins is with us from Washington. His latest book is called We Speak for Ourselves, A Word from Forgotten Black America. Chris Wilson is an artist and entrepreneur. His memoir is entitled The Master Plan, My Journey from Life in Prison to a Life of Purpose. Dr. Kimberly Moffitt is on the faculty of UMBC. You are welcome to be part of our conversation at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday WYPR. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. Let's go to the phones to Casey in Baltimore. Casey, welcome to Midday.
Hey, how are you today?
Great.
Listen, I've been listening to the show, and, you know, I don't agree with what that particular commander said, but I'm sorry to say...
You're talking about Mancuso? I'm sorry, you're talking about Mike Mancuso, the head of the FOP?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, so what he said was inappropriate, but I also... Listen, things in the city are bad. As an African-American man, as a Marine, as a business owner, as a homeowner, as a property owner here in Baltimore City, the reality of it is our kids are out of control. And I'm a father of two adults at this point, and I've seen things progressively get worse. So I don't agree with the tone or the language or the verbiage in which he did it, but he's not far off point. And we need to stop disillusioning ourselves, and we need to start being a part of the actual, you know, solution instead of perpetuating some of these things that these kids are doing. They were criminal. They were criminal. They were fighting. And every single year, we go through these same things. And it's time to stop. You know, I remember when Brandon Scott was just at the council and Stephanie Rollins-Blake made those comments about the youth. She wasn't far off base. They weren't far off base, but it was the verbiage that we didn't agree with. These kids are out of control, and I don't deal with it.
All right, well, thank you for that call, Casey. I appreciate it. Chris Wilson, your reaction.
So I would say this, right? I would say that I would push back a little bit in the sense that saying that our kids are out of control is impugning all of the kids in the city. So I think that's unfair. And by saying that, that's the same thing that the mayor has said about, like, these thugs. Like, we can't let a group of kids impugn all the kids in the city. So I think that's unfair.
Thank you.
Keep in mind, there were 400 or so kids down in the harbor by the police estimate, and six were arrested.
Right, right. And I think it's also important to have the conversation about if this is the case, if we do believe our children are out of control, again, what are the adults in the room doing about it? Right. We have to stop projecting onto children and having an expectation of how they are to behave if we as the adults aren't stepping in and doing what we're supposed to do to help guide them and give them the resources they need to be successful.
Yeah, and Dee Watkins, the mayor, Mayor Young, said this is on the parents. You know, there's 1% of kids hold the rest of us hostage. That was how he put it.
Well, you know, to the caller, you know, I definitely understand your frustration. We all get frustrated when we see anything negative in our city. But, you know, just to kind of connect to what Chris said, A, it's not everybody. And then B, every politician and every person who gets frustrated with these issues, they all do the same thing. They're the masters at identifying the problems. They're the masters at seeing the problems, but they never have any solution or they don't do anything. Right. Everybody says, I'm tired. And we need to do something. Okay, what? What are you going to do? Anybody can see that there's problems, but if you're not doing nothing, then your voice is irrelevant when it comes time to actually fixing something.
We have some suggestions from some listeners. Rob on Facebook says, all I saw was a bunch of cops chasing kids. I've seen worse fights at a high school a football game in Iowa. The FOP has no credibility in this town. And a thread from The Intersection, that's a group of young people, student leaders, they say show up to youth organized events targeting and supporting youth.
That's
Elijah,
right,
who's 18 years old from The Intersection, sent a tweet, build meaningful relationships with schools so that the community led by youth voice drives the decisions that schools make. Sid says, how about for every $1 increase in the police budget, we mandate a $1 increase for recreation and community centers. Alice on Facebook, what I do not understand is how and why the city police also appeared to be baited. City teachers must constantly de-escalate tense situations with children and sometimes even family members without weapons. Why is that the police are always reacting instead of being more proactive? Alice mentions that she is a Baltimore City school teacher. Marshall says, I'm from Baltimore. I live in the northern part of the city close to Towson. Violence is violence. Crime is crime. Just because something bad happened to you doesn't give you a free pass to do something bad to someone else. Your guests sound like apologists. So, Chris, we hear this a lot.
Right.
You know, forget rec centers, forget all that stuff. I mean, these kids are committing crimes. You know, lock them up, as they say at Trump rallies.
So I definitely don't agree with this, right? And the tone that I've been hearing from everyone is that we're so reactive to stuff that happens. And I've been going to schools almost every day of the week, Monday through Friday, to talk to children, especially here in Baltimore City. And, you know, I'm just upset that we're not going in and talking to these children more, especially even the police. Like, the police should engage them more. We shouldn't see a police officer when they come in, like, to grab us or question us, right? And so we got to be more engaging with the children. And I genuinely believe they will respond differently.
Yeah, and D. Watkins, I mean, I hear you when you say the police need to be held accountable, and so did the Justice Department when they wrote that scathing report in 2016 and put the city under a consent decree. Let's talk about accountability of the children, of the kids who are down there, because I saw some of that video, and there were kids running in and out of, darting in and out of traffic. You know, had I been driving down there that night, I would have been really worried about hitting somebody. I mean, in terms of accountability for these 16-year-olds, these 15- and 18-year-olds, What do you think the message to them should be? It's a separate issue from the accountability of the police, but for this particular issue, what do you think it should be?
So when I look at that, when I look at those videos, and as I listen to this conversation, I can't do anything but go back to this whole idea of that type of action is a cry for help. It's a cry for help. And, you know, all of us that have been through the system, or all of us that have gotten into some type of trouble, we will all sit here and be able to say that just locking people up is just not the answer. Throwing them in jail is not the answer.
Clearly it's not. So it's, short of that, or what's the alternative to that? What is the way in which when even a traumatized young person, and we can admit the trauma is there, we can admit it's real, and we could recognize it's real and elevate it as important. But what is there a how do you balance that notion of accountability?
It falls on us. They're the children. Yeah. It falls on us. They're growing up in the world that we left for them.
That's right.
So the accountability goes back to us. So when Chris Wilson goes inside of those schools, you know, he's taking that responsibility. When I go into all of the schools that I've been to with all of the workshops and the books and the food and the parties and the television stuff, that's me taking on that challenge. And we're just two people. And me and Chris, we're not the richest people. We're not even rich at all. Like, we're just two people who love our city. And we love them, and we're engaging them in different ways. And it's like, but it's not just us. It's going to take everybody who cares to do something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is the something?
I don't think these kids, okay, great. I'm glad you asked that. Doing something is whatever you are passionate about and sharing that skill with a person who hasn't had that experience.
It's true.
It doesn't take a lot. Like, if I was a little kid and I saw, like, a photographer like Devin Allen in my neighborhood giving out cameras, their photography would have became an option to me. And even if that wasn't my art form, maybe I would have discovered another one. These are all these young people, they're not being exposed to anything. They're not seeing anything but, you know, a lot of pain. Like, I'm not saying joy doesn't exist, because it does, but they see a lot of pain. They deal with a lot of BS, and they're obviously not getting what they need. Kids who get what they need don't recklessly, aimlessly lash out like that. So it goes back to us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not apologizing for anything. It's people have good experiences. Well, every once in a while you get one of these clowns who, like, comes from a messed up neighborhood, becomes successful, and then jumps on a podium and says, if I did it, everybody can do it.
Right.
But it's like, no, clown, maybe you had, like, a different opportunity, or somebody looked out for you in a way that changed the narrative for you. And so changing that narrative for somebody else is not you bragging about what you were able to do. It's about you trying to create that opportunity for somebody else and lifting as you climb.
410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. We're streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. Plenty of ways to get in touch with us and join our conversation. I'm Tom Hall here in the studio with Chris Wilson and Kimberly Moffitt. Dee Watkins joins us from NPR in Washington. Kimberly Moffitt, you're a parent. You're a college professor. You study perceptions of people. Sienna Greaves, our producer, came in about half hour before we went on the air with a fascinating thing. She said, if you Google Baltimore teens and you go to the images, it's all mugshots. Google San Francisco teens, it's white kids, Asian kids, and they're happy and they're playing on beaches and they're doing stuff. You Google Detroit teens, there's a couple of mugshots, but it's mostly scenes of children, you know, hanging out. So you Google Chicago teens and it's a lot more mugshots. Baltimore teens, the images on that is 90% mugshots.
Right. So we are helping to construct a particular narrative. And so the individual they talked about as operating from a position of apologizing for the actions of the teens, I would say that's never the case. I think what the three of us are doing are looking for what are the root causes of what is happening in our city and with our teens. And what we have learned over the years is that we aren't the village that we used to be to take care of these babies and to make sure that they are getting the guidance and direction that they need. And in fact, in many respects, we've done nothing but thrown them away, that we've looked the other way, that if they aren't behaving or acting in the way that we believe they should, then those aren't the ones that we exert our energy on or pay attention to. We then turn our eyes to those that we think can make it and can be successful. And I think when we and as adults, again, I argue the point that if we can sit on the sidelines and be the criminal to talk about what is so problematic in the city, then when do we get off of our behinds and say, let's be a part of the solution instead of talking about what the problems are?
Marty sends an email. Why doesn't the city welcome the kids in the harbor and have activities to engage them? We could man the harbor with hundreds of parent chaperones and broadcast elevator music. If the police treat the masses of kids like riot control, then they'll end up with a riot. The police will just have to have a presence to deal with unruly kids who are rebelling. It takes a village. Bring parent volunteers? That's an interesting idea.
They don't want a bunch of black kids to enjoy the inner harbor. They want the inner harbor to be for white businessmen on business trips with jeans and blazers hanging around the hotel lobby being creepy.
Don't get all stereotypical on me here, Dave.
I was going to say, what does Tom have on today?
I'm shaking my blazer. And I don't own khakis, but if I did,
it's not khakis, Tom. You need jeans. You need denim jeans and blazers, little loafers.
All right. So all of a sudden, I'm getting my fashion advice from Dee Watkins. Have gotten bad in our town when that happens.
Tom, you are a mentor. That's part of the solution.
Yeah.
And the conversation that we had about you being a mentor, and you don't even have to mentor 1,000 kids. Even if you mentor one or two, and you make a difference in their lives, and you just teach them that nobody makes it on their own. Nobody is self-made. Nobody achieves success or are able to live out their dreams without help and insight and resources from other people.
And Chris, this is something you write about in your book all the time. You were lost. I'm going to go to a phone call in Mount Vernon to Angela, because I think, Angela, this would be a good comment for you to respond to. Chris, Angela, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. You guys are hilarious. just to piggyback off of one of the comments that was made earlier about, a village. There was a surgeon, he was actually the head of emergency surgery at Hopkins, Dr. Edward Corwell. He used to come to the Cooley Center and play basketball. When he was there to play basketball, he was simply Eddie to all the guys in the community. But he, as well as another surgeon, African-American surgeon, in Prince George's County, they developed an outreach program for a lot of the quote-unquote at-risk kids in the East Side. And they took them to different establishments, different companies, different organizations, and exposed them to career options, not just firemen, policemen, doctor, but by biologist.
Yeah.
Biologist, you know, different options. And like you said, if they don't know their options, if we don't know our options, then we don't have a future. We don't have a vision. And just kind of to play back on what was said earlier about what people want to see in the city or at the harbor, it's also how we see our own youth. Because there are lots of different places where you go, and those cities, those communities, they highlight their youth. You know, they highlight their artistic abilities. They might be rough and rugged, but they have maybe their acrobatics. You know, and they give them a space. They give them an ability to make little, you know, petty cash off of their unconventional skill set.
Yeah, I appreciate that comment, Angela. Thank you so much. And Chris Wilson, when you know, you found yourself as a lost teenager,
right?
And you were incarcerated,
right,
and
for a long time.
And you were able to, you know, you had mentors, you had paradigms, you had things to look forward to, and you had an entrepreneurial zeal that has turned out to be make you a very successful person post prison.
So I think something that's very important that all of us have said was, having someone believe in you, it does take a village. It was a handful of people saw potential in myself when I didn't see it, even when I had a life sentence. And they gave me hope to believe that it was possible. I had to do it through books and reading and, like, you know, reading newspapers and studying people who were successful. And eventually I developed hope that I could be successful. And that's part of that's a big part of my message that I've been trying to transmit, especially to our young people every day. Throughout Baltimore City, is like, you know, I want them to see someone who looks like them, who comes from where they come from, who's successful, and I'm telling them that they can do it, and I'm giving them, like, ideas and tips on how they can do it.
We're going to take one comment from Twitter from LeVar. He's 18 years old. He's from the intersection. He says, when elevating youth voice, don't be selective. Those who continue to be at the bottom of the barrel for drugs, behavior, etc., should be at the front lines of youth voice platforms. Thank you, LeVar Bailey. I appreciate it. That is absolutely true. Deed Watkins joins us. His latest book is called We Speak for Ourselves, A Word from Forgotten Black America. Chris Wilson is an artist and an entrepreneur. His memoir is entitled The Master Plan, My Journey from Life in Prison to a Life of Purpose. Dr. Kimberly Moffitt is an associate professor and chair of the Language, Literacy, and Culture PhD program at UMBC. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. You can ping us on Facebook, the WIPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back. Stick around.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we're talking about youth in Baltimore. Last Saturday, large groups of teens gathered at the Inner Harbor. Incidents of violent assault, theft, and property damage have left business owners and people who were downtown that night shaken. Six young people were arrested on Saturday. The youngest was just 11 years old. On social media, the comments section has been lit, as the kids would say. Passionate and at times belligerent debate is indicative of a deeply divided city that is short on solutions but glutted with opinions as to who should bear the responsibility for Baltimore's at-risk youth. Are the parents to blame? The police? The city government? Let us know what you think. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we're streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. So, Kimberly Moffitt, in terms of holding parents accountable, holding the village accountable, and you make an interesting distinction.
I do.
Because
I do.
Jack Young said this is all about the parents.
Yes,
a lot of other
I
people.
I disagree with.
And so tell us why.
I disagree with because I think we operate in the world of parenting, we almost operate like we're a communist nation, that everybody has the same access to the same way in which of being raised. And I think it's clear, based on some of the other social ills that we experience in this city, that we know that there are parents who aren't parenting or don't have access to parent the way that we think it should be done. And so there is a distinction between making this about the village, meaning all of us, versus saying that this is just on the parents. And so when we do that, it absolves us of responsibility. I can point my finger and talk about Chris being the bad seed because he's not in my household and I'm not responsible for him. But the reality is, I was responsible for Chris Chris as well. And if we don't shift our mindset to think about that, and instead what we do is to continue to just throw away children, of course, hoping that the law enforcement will resolve the issue for us, which all of the data shows us it doesn't work. But yet and still, we continue to put all of our energy and effort and eggs in the basket to say, oh, let's just criminalize them, put them in jail, and that will fix the problem. But it doesn't do anything because the problem still exists within our communities.
And as I've said,
everybody's not blessed with great parents.
That's
right. And a support system. And just because you're not blessed with those things, it doesn't mean that you deserve to fail or just be written off.
That's right.
But yeah. I do have hope. People think I walk around without hope all day. It's not true. I got like bags of it. And I feel like, I think that our new mayor and I think that our new city council president, I believe that they understand the issues based on their own social context. And I think that they're going to listen and learn when it comes to the things that they may not understand. And I think that, I hope and pray that they connect with people like all of us, not just us on the panel, but other people who have a vested interest, who love this city, mm-hmm. and then we can all work together.
And,
like,
and it's not just the government. It's not just the government, of course.
Not just the government, but us.
Or the police.
Like,
yeah, as Kimberly says, it's us.
It's all
and
us.
It's the parents in Roland Park caring about the kids in Harlem Park.
We are out here. So, like I said, everybody's brand new with their jobs, but I trust that they'll rely on us, and I'm just reaching out saying I'm here to do whatever I need to do and utilize whatever platform I have to help, because these children, they're my family. The ones I know and I don't know, they're my family, and mm-hmm. I hope y'all can learn to see everybody.
Let's go back to the phones. Yeah, so let me go back to the phones here to Colin in Baltimore. Colin, welcome to Midday.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're great, thanks.
I just wanted to touch on a big issue that you guys just mentioned, and it is access. And when I think about that in terms of Baltimore, access is a wide-ranging issue that has affected the city generationally and across all barriers in terms of socioeconomically. Specifically, I feel like in terms of trying to fix problems involving children, you can't even really start to address that issue until you begin to address issues like lack of access to proper food, such as food deserts existing in the city, lack of access to proper educational infrastructure. And until you fix those problems, which themselves are entirely a generational issue, where it will take an entire generation, 20 to 25 years, before you actually start to see a positive impact from making an improvement in the infrastructure of the city educationally or access-wise into jobs and food, you're not even going to be able to touch the issue of raising children appropriately. And that deals with more complicated issues of labor time. For example, working family parents will have less time that they could actually invest in their children due to how long maybe it takes them to get transport to their job and from their job. So until you address those specific systemic issues, I don't even think it's worth even talking about.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Colin. I appreciate it. And Chris Wilson, the thing is that two things can be true at the same time.
Right.
That is very true, what Colin is saying, what we've all been saying. But those are longer-term solutions.
Right.
So people are wondering, okay, if you're the store owner in the Inner Harbor, where they were trying to smash your windows, if you're running the Renaissance Hotel and you have to close the building and not allow people outside, not allow people to go, I mean, what do you say? What do we say to that person who's sitting there in the lobby of the Renaissance Hotel? She and her husband are visiting Baltimore. They've got tickets to the Hippodrome, and they can't go to the show. And I don't know if this happened. I'm making this up. But there's a scenario of people who are literally locked down in the Renaissance Hotel at the corner of South and Pratt because there are too many kids running up and down the street in the Inner Harbor.
Well, I mean, first, I sympathize for anyone who's like spent that money on an inconvenience or whatever and worked hard for it, whatever. But at the same time, right, it's important. I wouldn't say that the problem's so big that we can't address it, right? I look at situations like this as an opportunity for us to actually do something, right? And so we can look at 2015, like during the uprising or whatever. Like, these are symptoms of generational trauma and policies that have been impacted, like, on our community. So, like, instead of us demonizing these young people and all these articles and stuff on social media, we should think about, like, why are they doing that? Or, like, what is, like, really going on? And that's really, like, how D says, let's really, like, go do something about it or whatever. Because, like, it'll happen again. again, if we're not going into these communities and addressing like these real issues and coming up with solutions, things like this are going to happen often, and we shouldn't wait for it to happen.
And we should say, to Mayor Jack Young's credit, that he was the impetus behind the Children and Youth Fund. Mm-hmm. They gave away $12 million this year to various groups all around the city, some very small, sort of, you know, less prominent nonprofits who are working with kids and stuff. Let's go to Clarence in New Freedom, Pennsylvania. Frequent caller, and we're always glad to hear from you, sir. How are you?
Thank you for taking my call, Tom. Look, I'm going to make this quick. One, access. A lot of children in Baltimore City have never been outside of the city, never been to Ocean City, never been to a class restaurant, McDonald's and Red Lobster. They've never been places where you've had a high-class inn. I volunteered at Poly Western before I moved up here to Pennsylvania, and took my own money and took children places. But adults in Baltimore City are failing the children, and until our children see that the adults care about them, they're going to continue to be in a out-of-order way. But access, and I talked to a young man the other day, we're going to try to see if we can take him fishing. He's never been fishing. He's 22 years old. With that, I'll take my comment off the air.
Excellent point, Clarence. And, you know, Kimberly Moffitt, the old saying that, you know, you can't imagine something you've never seen at all. You have to have some notion of it to have an aspiration.
Which is why we talk about representation matters, that you have to see those images in order to believe that you, too, can be a part of that image.
I have a dear friend, African-American woman in her 50s. She's a very prominent and very successful tech entrepreneur. She is the world's leading expert in web governance. She travels all over the world, speaks all over the world. Wrote the book that's considered the Bible for web governance. She and I have breakfast frequently when we hang out and do stuff. We had breakfast just this morning, and she said she is so aware in her soul of the women who came before her, from the women who are in the Middle Passage, who made it to these shores, who were enslaved, and then their progeny. She is part of that progeny. Mm-hmm. She says, I'm conscious of that every day in her work. And I wonder... We started then talking about what it takes to become conscious of that, you know, what it takes. So, Dee Watkins, I mean, how do we get, as you say, we all need to figure out what we can do to go in and raise the consciousness of where folks have come from historically and where folks have the possibility of going to ultimately.
So I grew up in a culture of victim blaming, where we just blame victims. So my whole life, I thought that every bad thing that happened to me was supposed to happen to me because, you know, this is just something that comes with, like, the skin color that I was born with. Like, I didn't even know anything about systemic racism and how powerful that racism is and how it constructed the reality that I had to grow up in. So now, now as I grew up, you know, I was able to learn and understand that, you know, it's not my fault that my neighborhood's policed a certain way. It's not my fault that my school doesn't have what other schools have. It's not my fault that, you know, my neighborhoods don't have stuff like kale and apples close. Like, I had to learn these things. And when I learned these things, I learned what to fight for. Two, I learned how to navigate in a way that I can achieve some type of success in the midst of all of the hurdles that I got to build with that's not supposed to come with an American experience. So I think, you know, people with platform, and this is like just talking to all of us who are on this show right now, it's our responsibility to acknowledge all of these problems. It's also our responsibility to not just provide solutions, but be a part of those solutions by talking about these things, helping people make their way through things and just try to change the culture. Because right now we're living in a culture where it's okay to just blame oppressed people for being oppressed. Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's time to get over that.
So Chris Wilson, I'm going to, yeah.
Counter what Dr. Moffitt said.
And Chris Wilson, I'm going to give you in the last 15 seconds. Yeah. One of the things that's pointed about your book is that you said, I didn't recognize myself what the potential was. It took someone to help you recognize that potential.
So a very important point. And so especially all of us adults, the village, right? It is our responsibility, especially for our young people, to see the potential. And they all have potential. let's help them see what their potential is. And I imagine a city, if we done that, it'll be a different city.
Well, I am grateful to all of you. I really appreciate it. We are out of time. I got to take my blazer off and go have a kale and apple sandwich. And enjoy it. All right, D-Rock.
Send me some.
That's right. D-Rock, it's Chris Wilson and Kimberly Moffitt. I very much appreciate y'all being with us. And we will have you back, of course. We'll have more information about these two terrific books, The Master Plan, My Journey from Life in Prison to a Life of Purpose by Chris Wilson, and then D-Watkins' latest collection of essays, We Speak for Ourselves, A Word from Forgotten Black America. We'll have links on our website, WIPR.org/midday. That's it for us today. Coming up on Monday, I'll speak with Congressman Jamie Raskin about Robert Mueller's comments on the Russia investigation, plus a discussion about the future of Pimlico Racecourse with Yitzi Schlieffer, State Senator Bill Ferguson, Doug Donovan of the Baltimore Sun, and Karen Hostler. We want to thank Bottoms Up Bagels for lunch today. Bottoms Up Bagels is a small-batch pop-up bagel shop preparing hand-rolled New Jersey-style bagels, house-cured lox, and specialty cream cheeses inspired by traditions of bagel making dating back to the 1940s. Bottoms Up Bagels offers customized catering packages of all kinds. You can find them at the Waverly and JFX Farmers Markets and online at bottomsupbagels.com. Midday's director and engineers, Luke Spicknall, Rob Sivak, Sienna Greaves, Kathleen Cahill, Jamila Krempel, Austin Coughlin, they're part of the team. Reveal's up next. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great and safe weekend. Get out there. Do something for a kid.
This is 88.1 WYPR.